The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good types.
But so many poor choices.
It sure is. This is the Homance Chronicles, and I'm Sarah.
And I'm Nicole.
I talked to her again. I did it. And I almost sang a little bit. I spoke to her again, and I almost sang a little bit. So.
Yep. Yeah. The sing song talk.
Yep.
Sing songy.
That. Of course, now my cat feels a need to stand right in front of me. She's not sitting. Boy, oh boy.
We're here.
We are. And this weather is very aggressive again.
Well, right before this recording, like right before we jumped on here, I had a contractor at my house, and he had his like notebook open on the floor. Oh. So I know it sounds weird, but he was like on the stairs, like on the stair steps, kind of like, I don't know. And then he just had his notebook set down like on the floor. Yeah. And Emma, my new pup, she's extremely friendly. She wants all of the pets, and she will step all over your things.
Oh, turns out she has no concept of that's something you shouldn't step on. Okay, cool. She's just gonna storm through everything.
Oh my gosh, she wouldn't even let him write. Like, I was like, oh, Emma,
it's fine. If that's the worst of it, it's fine.
I know. It's just funny because I see your cat's head like poke up, and I'm like, if I was on the floor, she'd be the whole screen because she gives zero fucks about stepping on my computer or a stranger's notepad or anything.
Yeah, no, there's no delicate there. No.
Her and her little corgi wiggle butt.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I can't wait to wiggle with her. It's going to be so fun.
She gets so excited when there's other people around. Like, she literally smiles.
Aww.
So you can't, aww. It's like hard to get mad at her. She's like dancing around, like wiggling. She's like.
I wish everybody could see that. That's so fun. But yeah. She's been acclimating well still, like hanging in there, being a trooper.
Yep.
Love this. I'm so happy for you guys.
She's all good.
I love it.
She's getting spayed tomorrow or Thursday.
I was going to ask, it's this week. Is she ready? We don't know.
Oh, she, yeah. No one knows.
And we never will. It's just going to happen one day.
It's just happening. So,
poor baby. She'll be okay. It'll be for the best.
Yeah. I don't want to go through a dog in heat again.
No, it's the biggest pain in the ass on the planet.
It's
they
crazy.
Bleed all over the place. Yeah.
I can't believe that the previous owners didn't have her spayed. Because, I mean, unless they were going to breed her, I don't know why they didn't. Because I'm like, wait, you guys dealt with this for twice a year for 3 years?
Yeah. No, thank you.
Ooh.
Nope. It's not worth it. They have a child now. It's fine. Moving on.
I wouldn't eat with their child 7. The other one's even older, probably like 14. So I don't know. I just was like, yeah.
It's for the best.
We're done with this situation.
It's for the best.
So, anyway.
Yeah.
Since I maintained her not getting pregnant while in heat, we have to talk about a different hoe.
Right.
Since,
and I am ready.
Since Emma's out of hoe status.
Yes. Well,
we need to move into a hoe of history.
So we've got one. I don't know. I feel like I should start with her marriages and children.
Okay.
Because she had six husbands.
Jesus. I can't even find six people I like.
I don't even have that. My friend group is not that big. Yes, correct.
Let alone six men I can tolerate. Jesus. Yeah.
Okay, so she had six husbands. She had adopted a child. She had a daughter. And I think she then had a son. Oh, she for sure had a son. It's just, it's wild. Like the amount, she eventually married her divorce lawyer.
Okay. Talk about taking advantage of vulnerable people.
Right.
The lawyer of her.
Yes. So she adopted a son, had a daughter, six mm-hmm. husbands. Mm-hmm. What a ride. What a ride. So, moving into her actual story, let me introduce you to Hedy Lamarr.
Okay.
Hedwig Eva Maria Kiesler. She was an Austro-Hungarian born in Vienna. She was born on November 9th, 1914, and she actually passed away in 2000. So, like,
woo,
she made it.
Yeah.
She made it through a bunch of crazy shit. What, you might ask? Let me tell you.
Do you, when you hear 2000, like the year 2000, do you only think of, like, Twilight Zone? Because that's what happens to me when it's, like, the year 2000.
Yeah, wee. I also think it's only, like, it was only yesterday that it was 2000. So there's that also.
Yeah. But I can't not, like, put the sing-songy again into my head every time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The year 2000. It was a ghastly year.
I was a junior in high school.
Oh, God. It means I was a freshman. Fuck that. Anyway, so she was born in Vienna. Mm-hmm. Only child of Gertrude and Emil. So her dad was, like, Galician Jewish, and he was from the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which is now, like, Lviv, Ukraine. And he was the deputy director of two different banking systems. Her mom was a native from Budapest, and she was a pianist from, like, an upper-class Hungarian Jewish family. So they had money, they had education, they had access to the arts, etc. Her mother decided to convert to Catholicism and raise her daughter as a Christian, although she was never actually baptized. She was a beautiful woman, and she was a beautiful young girl as well. At the age of 12, she actually won a beauty contest in Vienna. So during that time,
I feel
time,
like 12 was my most awkward year.
God, tell me about it. I
think,
like,
back to 12, and that's like sixth grade, and I'm like, greasy hair. You couldn't, like, get, you know, the body odor hygiene right. I don't know.
It was just like puberty. Fucked you over puberty. Yes.
And she's out here winning beauty pageants.
But also, like, the videos of these chicks now who are, like, 12 years old, and they're doing their TikTok dances. And there's, like, I saw one the other day, or it was these two chicks, literally maybe 14 years old, doing this dance. They looked like they're way older. And then it cuts to a home video from our era.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen those too.
Oh, God, it's so painful. It is so painful.
But anyway, it also disturbs me a little bit how grown up kids are now.
Yeah, it's not comfortable. It's
like
not comforting.
The amount of knowledge they have about makeup and.
But also, have you noticed it's only in the States? Primarily, you'll see kids that are just way older than they should be.
Really? I guess, yeah. I don't know enough, but I find it a little bit disturbing.
It's super disturbing.
They're passable for 18.
Yes. Yes. Like, how much more trouble can you possibly get into? Oh, God. Okay. So anyway, she did get in some, she was a little crazy herself. So Her dad actually was, he played a part in her life. He played a big part in her life. He invested a lot of positive energy into her. And so he would take walks with her and actually teach her about how technology worked, how the world worked, how automobiles worked. And she would eventually like learn to take apart her radio and how it, like, put it back together, just see like how it worked and all the inner workings. And so she was very technically inclined, mechanically inclined, but then her mom also had her in like ballet and piano classes. So she was just like language arts, as if language arts was a person. So at the age of like 14, she forged a note from her mother and took it to the Sasha Film company and got herself a gig as a script girl. So that's somebody who like ensures the continuity of scripts throughout the film, which I think is kind of interesting for like a 14, 15 year old girl to be like, I got continuity, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not me at 14 or 15 at all. Like, my outfits didn't have continuity, let alone my life. So by 1930, while she was at that company, she landed a role as an extra in Money on the Street and then a small speaking part in Store in the Water Glass in 1931. She was recognized immediately by producer Max Reinhardt, who was like a German producer, and he cast her in a play called The Weaker Sex. He was so impressed with her and the work that she did that he actually took her back to Berlin. She was younger than 18, so like, I don't know if she ever saw her family again or not. I have to assume so, but her career like completely took off from there. So Max was a prolific producer and really well known in the German language theater scene. She never made it into actually any of his plays. She ended up getting scooped up by another guy called Alexis Granowski. He was a Russian theater producer. And she was cast in a series of films for him from 31 to 32. He ended up leaving and went to Paris, but she stayed behind and landed a lead role in No Money Needed, which was a comedy directed by Carl Busi, who was another German director at the time. So she, like, movies went a lot quicker back then. It seems like you could like produce a movie in a year or less than a year. Like, it's not like it used, like it is now, where it takes years and years and years.
Yeah, because you don't have to put in all the special effects and do the audio dubbing and
there's so much less. So like the turnaround for all these films was quick. So she was in a lot of different things all at once. So in 1933, at the age of 18, she was the lead in the film called The Ecstasy by Gustav Machi. I'm saying that wrong. She was to play the part of a neglected young wife of an indifferent older man, who I think he was like probably 30 years her senior. So why did she go super internationally famous from that movie? Oh, because the close-ups of her while she was supposed to be in the throes of having an orgasm and other brief scenes of nudity.
Well, the film was called Ecstasy, so yeah. I just immediately was like,
assume, right?
They're up in her hoo-ha.
So she was one of those that like didn't really fully give the truth all the time, maybe. Or if she did, others were like, she's not telling the truth, so we don't really know. But she claimed the director and the producer duped her using a high-powered telephoto lens. Others claimed it was actually her, like other people that were involved in the actual movie making itself. So she didn't really fully trust the film industry at that point, but she gained world recognition and won an award at the Venice Film Festival. It was considered to be very artistic in Europe, but the Americans saw it as oversexual, and it was actually it received a lot of negative publicity, so much so that it was banned in America and in Germany. So remember, Hedy Lamarr is actually a very famous actress from the American film industry.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But
now when it comes to soft porn.
Mm-mm. Nope. Or simulated soft porn anyway. So she was in another starring role for the show called Sissy. It was a play about Empress Elizabeth of Austria, produced in Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
It won more accolades, and Hetty started to gain a lot of admirers. So much so that they started to try to get backstage. One that by the name of Friedrich Mandel was so obsessed with her that he eventually worked his way into her life. Now, he was an Austrian military arms merchant manufacturer who was the third richest man in Austria. She fell for his charm and more than likely the large amount of money that he had.
I was like, is charm the new word for money?
It is. It absolutely is. He was also in his 30s when she was just 18. So, ew.
Yeah, but I could see the him potentially still being handsome, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, there's potentially something there.
I could see him being very charming and handsome.
Right. And, you know, because he's in the industry of war, he's likely very capable of holding conversations. Her parents did come and go at that point in her life. They were not cool with him at all because he was connected to the Italian fascist leader Mussolini and Hitler. Like, they were buddies.
Oi.
She was unstoppable, though. She was like, I don't care. So on August 10th of 1933.
She wanted the power.
Yeah, she wanted the money. So in 1933, they wed. She was 18 and he was 33. Looking back now, what the fuck? So she had, there is an autobiography.
It's making me think, though, about the latest info with Bradley Cooper and Gigi Hadid.
Oh, God, what is happening now? Do I even care to know? I, like, don't
know. Oh, they were spotted with their, like, weekend bags over coming back from somewhere in New York or whatever.
Oh,
like,
brother.
And they're 20 years apart. And, like, yeah. In my brain, this is what I'm picturing for Hetty and her mans.
Oh,
I forgot his name already.
Frederick.
Yeah. So I'm picturing them as a Bradley Cooper and Gigi Hadid in my brain.
I can dig it. I'm here for that. So there was an autobiography, allegedly it was her autobiography called Ecstasy and Me. Later on, she claims it was part fictional, part fact. There's a whole, we'll get into it later, but keep that in mind. This will resurface from time to time. So in the autobiography, Ecstasy and Me, she claims that her new husband hated her orgasm scene so much that it actually prevented him from letting her, air quotes, pursue further acting. So essentially she was like a prisoner in her own home, she said. He essentially wanted to have...
Didn't this happen prior to them getting married, though?
Oh, yeah. He didn't like it. He became a fan of her and then took her in and decided, you were no longer able to be your own autonomous human being. You are now my toy.
Yeah, I guess the way that it's being described makes me think that, like, it happened while they were together. And I'm like, but that's not accurate.
No.
He just is controlling freak because he's got Mussolini.
And Hitler in his fucking back pocket. So... Because he had close ties with the Italian government as well as Germany's Nazi regime, she noted that the dictators from both countries would actually attend to lavish parties at the house that they lived in, like their house. Her husband was of Jewish heritage. Shamey, shamey. Shame on him. So
it makes me think of our current days where we had Trump and then you'd see, like, I don't know, some random black person that was like supporting him, even though he was just like calling black people like by racist names 2 minutes ago. Like, it's like history repeats itself.
Where are we? We're in the same place, different time. Okay, got it. Fuck. Right? But yeah, so he was all in for the loot, I have to assume. So she actually was allowed to attend business meetings where she was exposed to scientists and other professionals involved in military technology. Remember, she was technically inclined. Excuse me. Oddly enough, this is how she was introduced to the field of applied sciences and nurtured her natural talent in that time. After 4 years of marriage, she had to call it quits. Like, she could no longer do it. This man was genuinely just there for her to be a doll for him to take around, show everybody. She was to be seen and not heard. She wasn't allowed to do anything. So she decided she needed to separate herself not only from him, but the country, because she just did not like the direction any of it was going in. So she stated, "I very soon knew that I could never be an actress while I was his wife. He was an absolute monarch in his marriage. I was like a doll. I was like a thing, some object of art, which had to be guarded and imprisoned, having no mind or life of its own." So she was not into it. In 1937, she fucking bailed. We don't know for sure what happened. There's two stories. She states in her biography, Ecstasy and Me, remember, that she convinced her husband to let her wear all of her jewelry for a dinner party and then promptly disappeared right after. However, others say that she disguises herself as a maid and fled to Paris. So in 1937, you would assume somebody had more brass facts, tax facts about this, but we just don't. We don't know what really happened, and she never actually fully disclosed
it. She can decide whether or not she wants to share that information. Right. Like, it's locked up with her.
Right, which is, it's so funny to me. She knows the truth.
If she impersonated a maid, I feel like she'd get caught somehow. Like, somebody would be tipped off, right?
I don't know. Right? I don't know. She, like, maybe impersonated a maid to leave the estate, and then, but you right. know. So, however, she ended up bailing. She ended up in London in 1937 and met up with Louis B. Mayer, who was the head of MGM Studios mm-hmm. in Hollywood. He was actually in Europe talent scouting. So he initially offered her a contract that gave her $125 a week, and she fucking turned it down. However, your girl sussed out his flight, booked a seat, and managed to secure a contract for $500 a week while flying.
Whoa.
Get it, Hetty. So in turn, he persuaded her to change her name to Hetty Lamar to lessen her connections to her real identity and past with Ecstasy Lady and shit like that. So she wasn't Hetty before MGM. She was Hedwig.
Right.
Kiesler.
Right. Wow. That's interesting. So, what an interesting move to decline and then go hunt down.
Yeah. Oh, fancy seeing you here. I'm on my way to Hollywood also.
Right.
Bubble up the conversation again. Like, all right. You can see how
she got lucky there was a seat open on that plane.
Well, you can see how she works. She's fucking smart and manipulative.
Yeah.
Like, shit.
Yeah.
So, the name Hetty Lamar. Hetty obviously is a ripoff of her actual name, but the word or the name Lamar is actually paying homage to this guy's wife's favorite person in some situation. So it came from somewhere. It wasn't just a random name.
Mm-hmm.
In 1938, he took her to Hollywood and began promoting her as the world's most beautiful woman. Soon she was loaned out to producer Walter Wanger, who made Algiers, which was in 1938. It was an American-French version of a film, or American version of a French film. She was cast as a lead with Charles Boyer, who was another actor at the time. So remember, male actors were very, very popular because they were the ones that got all the roles and they were allowed to speak intelligently and they were typically the saviors mm-hmm. and all that fun stuff. Women were just accessories in movies at this stage. So she wasn't hired for any kind of ability to deliver lines or intellect. It was literally because she was absolutely fucking gorgeous.
Right. And I'm sitting here going like, so she knew English well enough?
Yes.
Okay.
She sure did. So apparently though, when she appeared on the screen, everybody gasped at her natural beauty. The film created a national sensation and created anticipation in audience because she was this nobody, low-build cast from who knows where. Like, they didn't really give a lot of, you know, you don't have a lot of Google. You don't have a lot of information on somebody. She just appears in a movie. You're like, who the fuck was that? And you don't have any way of getting information on her because there's no information to be found, to be had. Anywhere.
Well, there's no source to go find information. Yeah.
Yeah, there it is. No Google. So
yeah.
She was then typecast as the like typical glamorous seductress of exotic origin. And remember, this is in the 1930s. So she was cast as different races.
E.
Yeah. Okay. So she was in Boomtown with three other better known stars that helped her gain her start. Boomtown made $5 million. So MGM immediately paired her up again with Clark Gable in Comrade X, which was filmed and released in 1940. It was a comedy. She was teamed up again or then with James Stewart.
And you think about this, you say those numbers, and wasn't it the Great Depression?
Yeah, 100p.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. She teamed up with another guy called James Stewart and Come Live With Me in 1941. She played a Viennese refugee. So not a Vietnamese, a Viennese. Vienna. She also started.
That's passable.
Yeah, she also starred in Ziegfeld Girl in 1941, another with Judy Garland
and
Lana Turner, and it was a huge success.
It was so funny because before you said who you were doing the story on today, uh-huh. I initially was thinking Judy Garland.
Oh, funny.
Yeah.
Nope. Headley, which there's a reason for it, and I didn't kick off with that because it's in her story. So she was getting a lot more notoriety. Again, two big movies in 1941 were released. And so she was still getting notoriety and ended up being top billed in the next film, H.M. Pullum Esquire, again, in 1941. So loads of movies were being produced in this time frame. Like, I feel like it took months. So she made two more films in 1942 that were very successful as well. So in 1941, she played an exotic Arabic seductress in a movie called White Cargo and was top billed over the male lead, Walter Pidgeon. It was a huge hit. It contains arguably her most memorable quote in a film delivered with a provocative invitation. I am Tone DeLeo. I make tiffin for you.
What? Are you saying another language? What's happening?
No, her name was Tone DeLeo, and she asked, I make tiffin for you.
In the movie?
Yes.
Okay.
So this line typifies many of her roles that she played. Remember, she was not cast for her ability to deliver lines.
Yeah.
So essentially, she was always there to be emphasized for her beauty and sensuality. The lack of acting challenges bored her to death almost. And so she took up inventing to relieve her boredom. So in her spare time, while she was on set, she tinkered, she came up with ideas. She had she was dating a guy at the time called Howard Hughes. And
just some guy called Howard.
Just some guy called Howard Hughes.
Oh my God.
I'm glad you caught that. So she was dating him at the time, and he really encouraged her to invest herself into doing more scientific and inventive type stuff. So she tinkered, she came up with ideas for improved traffic lights. She even created an idea for a tablet that could be dissolved in water and it would turn into something like Coca-Cola. Howard would take her places and let her little scientific brain run wild. He took her to museums and explained how airplanes worked. And
I'm like, but how does a engineer or biospace guy I come across her path? Like, how do they meet?
Well, he was a producer too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was in the film industry. So he caught up with her and was like, hey girl, let's hang out. And she's like, okay. But it was really more like she was dating him for intellect and not necessarily for lust or love, because they never actually got married.
Okay.
But she had an invention table set up at her house, and he gave her, like I said, a small set of equipment to have while she was on set and her trailer. So during World War II, this was between, I think in 1942. Yeah. So in 1942, between the seductress in White Cargo, I guess acting also didn't take a lot of time up. So she was able to do a lot of this shit in her spare time. So she and her friend, George Anthal, who was a composer and pianist, learned that radio-controlled torpedoes were being intercepted by the enemy jamming signals. They derived a plan to create a system that allowed users to hop around on radio frequencies to avoid the signal being jammed. So the concept caught on, and because he was musically inclined, she ended up taking him and went to Caltech, introduced him to Samuel S. McCowan, who was a professor of radio electric engineering. She later employed Samuel to implement the idea, and she hired the firm Lyon & Lyon from LA to essentially do her Google work to figure out, has anybody done this before? If not, let's apply for the patent. She was later granted the patent on August 11th, 1942. And although it was never actually used, so she never made a penny from it, it was one of the crucial inventions that led to the creation of like Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, GPS, and even cellular devices. It's claimed that it was one of the foundational pieces of that, but you know, there's other technology that had come before that. So it's like, it was definitely, it contributed to it, but it wasn't like one of the foundational pieces. Mm-hmm. So long story short, in 1997, caught all the way to the 90s, they actually received the Electronic Frontier Foundation Pioneer Award and the Bowlby Nass Spirit of Achievement Bronze Award, basically given to individuals whose creative lifetime achievements in the arts and sciences, businesses, or invention fields have significantly contributed to society. And then in 2014, after she passed away, after I'm sure they both passed, they were inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Like,
she was not only just a seductress on the golden screen, but she was actually very intelligent as well. So she like had balance.
Well, she was smart enough to get out of Germany before World War II.
There's that also. So in 1944, she jumped back in and starred in a number of movies outside of the MGM name. She went back to MGM and was teamed up with Robert Walker in a romantic comedy, Her Highness and the Bellboy, in 1945. She played a princess who falls in love, and it was a very popular flick, but it would be the last film she ever made under her MGM contract. She went on to form a production company herself with Jack Sherdock, the guy who created Lone Ranger, the black and white series that had about 182 episodes, and produced two flops that were well over budget. So, like, she wasn't good at this shit. In 1950, she was in Samson and Delilah. It was the highest grossing film of that year and actually won two Oscars. So, like, she kind of rebounded a little bit. She went back to MGM for another flop, unfortunately. So it never actually made it to production. She then went to Paramount for two more movies before her career basically was, like, over. She went to Italy and played in multiple roles and tried to produce her own movie, but actually lacked the experience that she needed to like push it through to the end. She ended up losing millions because she couldn't secure a distribution contract with somebody. So like she got to that point where it was ready and then she couldn't push it through the door, unfortunately.
Oh
yeah.
Heartbreaking. That sucks.
I know. I'm sure it was probably a good movie. So after that, she was in a series of movies. She was Joan of Arc in Irwin Allen's Story of Mankind, which was a huge movie. She did episodes at Zane Grey Theater, and she was in her last film called The Female Animal in 1958. She was signed up to act in the film Picture Mommy Dead in 1966, so like almost 10 years later, but was let go after collapsing during filming from nervous exhaustion. Like, really? That poor woman was sick and tired. Let's be honest. Zsa Zsa Gabor replaced her. So on April 10 of 1953, she was only 38 years old.
Oh my God.
So obviously in the 66 film Mommy Picture Mommy Dead, she was 48, 50-ish, so she was a little bit older. But she became a naturalized citizen when she was 38 years old. So remember the biography Ecstasy and Me? She said on TV that it was not written by her and much of it was very fictional. She ended up later suing the publisher, saying that many of the details were fabricated by its ghostwriter. And she was then in turn sued by Gene Reginald, who asserted the book plagiarized materials from an article he wrote in 1965 for Screen Facts magazine.
Oh my God. You can't sue somebody and then also be
sued at the same time for something you're suing somebody else for.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Unless, right?
Yes, I just was about to say messy.
She's just messy after. So in the late 50s, she also helped, like, between all of these things, she helped design and develop the Villa LeMar ski resort in Aspen with her then husband, Howard W. Howard Lee.
Okay.
He was a Texas oilman. He had money. In 1966, LeMar was arrested in LA for shoplifting. They were eventually dropped. And then in 1991, she was arrested again for shoplifting in Florida. She got caught stealing $21.48 worth of laxatives and eye drops.
Oh my God, that means that she, like, really needed that stuff.
Who knows?
Right? She
pled no contest to avoid a court appearance, and the charges were later dropped in return for her promise to refrain from breaking any laws for a year.
Well, but she's, like, what, in her 70s or 80s?
Yeah. In the 70s is when she started to seclude herself. Although she was offered work, none grabbed her attention. She was not interested. But in 1974, the film Blazing Saddles ran a parody of her name, Hedley, not Hedy, H-E-D-L-E-Y, which is something that I remember from my childhood. And so when I saw this, I was like, I have to. It's Hedley.
Yeah.
I have to. So she ended up settling out of court. She sued Mel Brooks, the producer. He was actually honored that she came out of seclusion.
I was like, he probably liked the attention.
He did. Mel Brooks 100% did. He was honored she would come out of seclusion to sue him, and stated that she never really got the joke. So it was a thing. So yeah, in 81, she did move to Florida. Her eyesight did start failing. So that's, you know, in 91, she got caught shoplifting. More than likely, she was hurting for cash. She was so happy. So in 1996, an image of her won a magazine cover design contest for a software suite. And it had been around for, like, several years. Beginning in 97, it was starting to get featured on boxes of software. And she sued the company for using her image without her permission. However, the company countered that she did not own the rights to the image itself. They ended up reaching settlement in 98 for an undisclosed settlement. So basically saying the artist's depiction is not her property and she can get fucked.
Oh my God, our legal system.
I know.
It's still this woman's face.
Right. That's insane. So she was.
Can you imagine you just, like, you know, scrolling through stuff or whatever? Like, because nowadays that's what would happen is you'd scroll through Instagram or something and be like, hey, that's me.
Exactly. Like, oh, look at me go.
But wait, who are these people?
The fuck? So she was honored with a Star of Fame, or Star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 1960. She was selected as the most promising new actress in 1939. She was voted the 10th best actress for her performance in Samson and Delilah in 51. The British drag queen Fufu Lamar passed away in 2003, originally took a surname from the actress when embarking on his little performance career there. She, in 2006, the Hedy Lamarr wig was founded in Vienna and named after the actress. It was the 12th district court, I think, something like that. The University of Vienna installed a quantum telescope on the roof, and they named it after her in 2014. And let's see.
You didn't really tell us like who she had the kids with and who the six husbands were, though.
Well, I'm getting there. I had to do it in chunks because they didn't have it timelined in her career. I didn't have, unfortunately, the time to like put it all together that way, how I normally do.
Chronicle it.
Yeah. So she became estranged from her older son. Oh, she passed away on October 9th. I'm sorry, January 19th. She was born October 9th. No, she was born November 9th. January 19, 2000. She passed away, I am assuming, from like natural causes. She secluded herself so much so that she would spend like hours on the phone every day, but would never actually see people in person, not even in her final years. So like she was very much in seclusion at the end. She had heart disease and she was 85. And her son, Anthony, spread her ashes in Vienna's woods in accordance with her last wishes. And then a memorial for her was unveiled in Vienna's Central Cemetery in 2014. So Lamar, she was estranged from her older son, James, when he was 12 years old. Like, their relationship ended abruptly, and I think it's because he was adopted. So let me go down there really quick. So, yeah, she adopted a child during her second marriage, Jean Markey. And I think basically, like, she adopted him and then left him with Jean. And then when she married John Loder, he was an actor. They had a daughter and a son, Anthony. And he was actually featured in the film 2004 documentary for Calling Hedy Lamarr. She divorced him and moved to Ernest Stauffer, who was a nightclub owner. Things just kind of got worse. She was then married to Howard Lee. He was a Texas oilman. He actually ended up marrying film actress Jean Tierney later. And then at the end, her sixth husband, Lewis, was her divorce lawyer. So in 1965, her string of marriages and divorces ended, and she remained unmarried for the last 35 years of her life. And she She claimed her first son was not biologically related and adopted during her marriage to Jean. So, weird. Okay, so it says here, years later, her son found documentation that he was the out-of-wedlock son of Lamar and actor John Loder, who she later married as her third husband. So, again, unfortunately, I didn't have enough time to go through it. However, she became estranged from James when he was 12. Basically, their relationship ended abruptly, and he moved in with another family, and they didn't speak again for almost 50 years. So, she even left him out of her will. When she passed, he sued for control of the $3.3 million estate left by Lamar and eventually settled for $50,000.
I'm surprised he got anything.
Right. Well, I mean, he proved out he was her biological son, so they gave him something. So shout out to womenshistory.org and Wikipedia for supplying us again with all of this history and fun facts. I wish I would have had more time to go through and get like all of the information on her marriages and relationships, because she definitely man-hopped. She also passed away in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, but it's just sad though that like she had all those relationships and then none of them stuck.
And she was alone, yeah. Yep. So, pop culture, I'm just going to run through the Wikipedia stuff. She, so they named the villain in Blazing Saddles Hedley Lamarr, and that's why she was upset. She was mentioned in A Little Shop of Horrors. She was, they had a head crab in a video game named after her. Her son Anthony was in a documentary. There was a play called Frequency Hopping that featured the lives of Lamarr and George while they were going through their like invention. She had a mockumentary where the Irish scientist main character is supposedly modeled after Hedy. And the list goes on. There's all kinds of different shit in here that she had been noted for in some way, shape, or form.
That she inspired.
Mm-hmm. And since I mentioned it, in 2015, on November 9th, the 101st anniversary of Lamarr's birth, Google paid tribute to her, her work in film and her contributions to scientific advancement with an animated Google Doodle. Which I think those are fun.
You haven't made it till your Google Doodle.
I know. Shout out, where's our homance Google Doodle? And even in just recently in 2023, a dance production called Hedy Lamarr, an American Muse was made in her honor by Lindsay Rickles McRae. And looks like in that was down in Gadsden, Alabama. So yeah, Hedy Lamarr, y'all. Hedwig.
So crazy. She was just full of vigor.
All over the map.
Or as grandparents used to say, full of piss and vinegar, that one.
Yep. Oh God. Full of piss and vinegar. Which is,
I'm still stuck on this whole flight situation. She truly was just like, there's nothing for me here. It doesn't matter. I'll just get on this plane.
Yeah. I'm a hustler, baby. I know. So she had patents. She had ties to Hitler and Mussolini. She was on the golden screen in Hollywood and then became a recluse.
I feel like it's a tragic story of child star.
It is, in a sense.
In a way.
I would agree. Yeah. I would agree with that for sure. And the fact is, like, she wasn't really a child star per se. She was.
No, no. She, I guess, it follows the trajectory, though, of her being so young when she became so popular.
Right.
Because her popularity initiated in Europe. So America was like a different wave. At that point, she was an adult.
Well, I was going to say, like, she got to forget her sordid past and re-anew. Start anew.
She pretended to be a whole new person.
A whole ass new person.
That's why I said I'm literally like, she got on that plane going, well, I'll just see where we land and who I'll become.
If anything, I'll be in America. So there's that. Yes. Yeah, just like, I wish I had, like I said, wish I had more time to really understand who she was deeper as a person. Because, like, the fucking audacity. And I'm using that in the kindest way possible. For her to, like, track it down, figure it out, and just be like, hi, remember me? Oh, you're here. She probably played, you know, coy. Oh,
right.
fancy meeting you here. Where are you going?
Right. Right. Huh. Crazy.
$500 a week, man. That's
comparative
so much money.
Compared to the $125 he offered. I mean, that's quite the negotiation.
Right.
What happened on that plane?
She showed him her tits.
I was like, my high club.
I don't know. She had to flirt her way into that contract. She genuinely don't understand it.
I know. I mean, I don't like to diminish women down to.
No, I'm saying it because she was manipulative as fuck.
I know, but I don't like to diminish women down to like the fact that they did a flirtatious ploy or some sort of hookup or something, but he clearly was enamored with her beauty and she used it to her advantage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. We don't know. The world may never know. But she did it. Hetty did the damn thing.
Jeez, Hetty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for sharing that story.
Absolutely.
Lots of name drops. This episode was full of name drops.
I know. Yep. Judy Garland, Hitler, all in the same fucking conversation.
All tied together by a
one lady.
Woman from Austria.
Who was an inventor. and fucking drop dead gorgeous actress. Like, who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah.
Not me. So thank you for informing me.
You're welcome.
Is it Atta girl time?
I was going to say, I believe it's time for the girls of Atta.
Atta girls are where we pat ourselves on the back for something good that we've done or something good that's happened to us. We just like to end on a positive note. And I can't believe I didn't use this for a previous Atta girl. I told you very briefly before this episode started. I gave you a little quick history of the fact that I have been battling my side storm door and it won. And so I got locked out of my house.
And it won.
And I'm proud of myself, though, for like not panicking. And I believe it was within the first week of having Emma, the new dog. And so like that's even more hectic, is that you don't have a phone, you don't have your keys, the dog, everything's inside. You're the only one outside.
Yeah. God, it feels like the 90s all over again. Just pure panic.
I know, but the thing is, like, I'm not silly enough to not have a spare key or to have people who have spare keys. It's just that that's not what's going to help me in this scenario.
Well, the barrier for the door is the one that's the problem.
The door that is the legitimate door that you put the key in is open. So I ran down to one neighbor's house where he's retired and usually home. He was not. Then I ran to the other neighbor's house that I didn't want to have to talk to. And I borrowed a Phillips head screwdriver that was part of a combo tool.
No.
So it was just, you know, what she could find. And then as I'm unscrewing the molding or trim or whatever you call the door that's attached to the jamb, as I'm unscrewing each screw painfully slow, the neighbor that lent me the screwdriver is watching from her porch. Well, actually, she's talking to me about other things
the comfort of her own home.
And Emma is barking her head off because she can see me but can't get to me. And then another neighbor comes and she's walking a different neighbor's dog. And she walks up and is just talking to me about normal stuff, as if she doesn't see that there's a whole scene happening here. And I wasn't unscrewing the screws yet. She walked up and I had the screwdriver in my hand.
Okay, here we go. Hello, as you start to screw things. Yes.
And so then I'm like, she's asking me about Emma and stuff. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have to finish this combo after I actually get into the house, though. And she's like, oh my goodness, like, can I help you? And blah. And I'm like, well, I guess we could try calling the first neighbor that I went to. Cause like the car was outside, but they just answered the door. I was like, cause if this unscrewing thing doesn't work, I'm gonna need a more forceful hand here.
Method of entry. Need to dial a friend.
And so then there, the two neighbors are chit-chatting, the dogs are barking, like the dogs in the neighbor's house, the dog that the other neighbor's walking, my dog, like it was just a lot of chaos happening. And I, of course, did my normal duck move that I do where I am calm on the surface and just like the little duck feet are pitter-pattering inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as the one neighbor like is leaving the voicemail, I pull the door open. And so I was like, false alarm.
That's awesome.
She hangs up and then she's like, you're very resourceful.
Love it. I love it.
It was a chaotic 30 minutes.
Yeah, just like the chaos of your driveway, just chaos.
Yeah.
The construction chaos at the end of your driveway, just 30 minutes panicking.
Yes, where I thought that I was trapped in my driveway because there was a giant hole dug mm-hmm. into the road and my end of my driveway cement torn up. And I was like, how am I going to get out of here?
Mm-hmm. That time.
Panic, panic.
Oh, dear. I'll just drive over my neighbor's yard. It's fine. Should I do that, though?
Well, and then this whole time I'm like in my head going, oh, I told this guy I'd have this stuff for him by the end of the day. Right? And it wasn't like it was my emergency. It was his emergency that he made right. mine because he asked me to do it last minute. And I'm like, sure, no problem. Except for you need to be able to be in your house. So then I still got it done, but I sent it to him. I'm like, sorry, this took me longer than expected. I got locked out.
He's like, yeah, likely story. Well, I'm glad you made it back in and that you met your deadline.
I did.
Atta girl.
What a scene. Anyway, you're so, atta girl.
My atta girl is not nearly as exciting or eventful.
The funniest part is that I'm by myself like 90% of the time.
Right.
And I work from home. Like the majority of my life is boring.
Right. And then these things happen and it takes
and
you.
And then somehow every week though, I still have a story.
The pendulum just swings really hard in the opposite direction. Yep. Oh God. So I am atta-girling because I was so productive on Saturday. And Seth surprised me with Lions tickets and we went to the Lions game on Sunday. I was like so productive on Saturday. I could actually enjoy the game on Sunday because I wasn't thinking of all the things that I wasn't getting done because I wasn't at my house.
Nice.
Yes. So I was pretty stoked about that. I'm not going to lie. I mean, like, and by productive, I mean like I not only did house chores, but I actually did some extra work to account for some time I'm going to be out of the office because I'm going to go visit my sister and my mom. And like that work was produced at a high caliber, which I was really proud of. And then like all the work I got done in the house was done. I was just really proud of myself, really celebrated on Sunday. It was a good day.
Okay. Yeah. You were moving and grooving.
Yep. Yep. Didn't get this homework done, but I got a lot of other shit done.
Well, atta girl.
And then I got this done on time. Booyah!
Yeah. I'm glad you were able to enjoy the game without thinking about your garden.
Me too. My garden still is producing, by the way. I'm giving up on it this weekend. It's the final weekend. We're ripping her out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. I know.
If you liked what you heard today, please rate, review, subscribe. Tell your friends about us.
Yeah.
If you'd like to submit a hoe of history for us to review, then you can contact us on Instagram at homance_chronicles or send us an email, homancepodcast@gmail.com. We still have a Facebook group, closed group, that is running amok. The Homance Chronicles, a judgment-free zone.
That's true.
And you can get your Homance merch at NicoleBonneville.etsy.com.
Do that. Do all of those things. If you want merch, if you find something that we've said to be incredibly hilarious, and you just let us know. See if we can't make that happen for you. Homance out.